my pleasure to welcome you this evening to our JEP Identity Lecture. I would like to begin by acknowledging our gratitude to our gracious hostess, Shelley Goldfeder, who is always consistently, over the years, very eager to open her home. It's a great pleasure to be here, Shelley. Shelley is very much involved in every angle of JEP activity. The best I could say to sum up Shelley's role is that she does not like being in a limelight, but she's the one who provides the batteries. Tonight's lecture is a memorial lecture in memory of Yehuda Goldfeder, about whom I would not just say Zichrono Levracha, may his memory be for a blessing, but I would say in the case of Yehuda, who I was very, very close to, I would say Zeche Tzadik Levracha, the memory of a tzadik should be for a bracha, because Yehuda was a tzaddik. Our friendship, my personal friendship with Yehuda goes back to, I'd say, about 25 years ago, when my wife and I, we lived in Queens, and the Goldfeders lived in Queens. And what can I tell you? I see there's a photograph that Shelley placed here, which says a lot about who Yehuda was. Yehuda was an individual who had genuine, heartfelt Ahavas HaTorah. This picture shows and, indicates who he was better than anything I could say. He really embraced the Torah. He embraced the Torah with his entire heart. He demonstrated his love for Torah in many, many different ways. The one thing that stands out in my own mind, in terms of Yehuda's love for Torah, I remember very, very well the way he davened. Well, davening is not such an easy mitzvah, because when we daven, we're talking to someone who's invisible. Of course, there's a lot of evidence that points to the existence of the one we're davening to. But it's not that easy to talk to someone that you cannot see. Yehuda was able to talk to Hashem and have a very real sense that he was talking to his Creator. One thing that I recall was that when Yehuda, the last number of years of his life, he was quite ill, and at one point he lost his eyesight. I remember being in the Young Israel of New Rochelle one morning when he was there davening, and he couldn't read the Siddur, but he was there davening, and he was really davening. He was talking to someone who was invisible, and he couldn't see, but he was really davening. He really had an Avas HaTorah, and we need to learn from the example of such a special individual who left an enormous void. He was also an individual who was, in addition to his Avas HaTorah, he also had great Avas Yisrael. He really loved every Jew. He exuded love for every Jew. He also was another specialty of Yehuda was a third area of Ava, was Avas Eretz Yisrael. And this is something that, was a central feature of Yehuda's whole value system. So what can we say, Shelley? We all miss Yehuda together with you. And we all hope that we'll be able to learn from Yehuda's golden neshama. And we hope the fact that we are here tonight for this memorial lecture bearing his name will serve to elevate Yehuda's very precious neshama to an even higher point in Gan Eden than it is already on. It is my great pleasure this evening to introduce an individual who many of you have been privileged to hear already, because we have had the wonderful opportunity to invite Rabbi Pfeiffer to speak for us on a number of occasions. When I introduce to you Rabbi Pfeiffer, I am introducing to you someone who I consider a really close personal friend. Let me begin by saying that we all should consider ourselves tonight as honorees. You know, we just had our JEP annual dinner, and we had some honorees there. Tonight we're all honorees. Why do I say that? Because Rabbi Pfeiffer told me that, you know, he's asked to speak by many different organizations, but he invariably he can't accept. He's just, the man is spread too thin. He's the rabbi of the Aguda of Bayswater, which is a wonderful, flourishing shul. We even have three individuals here tonight who are connected to JEP, and they're part of his shul. I sometimes am there for Shabbos, and it's a wonderful congregation. So he's very busy with his congregation. He's also very busy teaching kids. He's a rebbe in Darchei Torah, very wonderful yeshiva. Not only that, but he and his rebbetzin are blessed with over one dozen Yiddish kinderlach. Yeah? So now I think we all understand why, when anybody asks Rabbi Pfeiffer, could you come and speak for us, please? He has to say no. It's impossible. Mission impossible. But Rabbi Pfeiffer told me he makes only one exception. JEP of Westchester. We have managed to somehow find a special place in Rabbi Pfeiffer's heart, which we're very grateful. So that's why I say it's an honor for us to be here tonight, because when Rabbi Pfeiffer will make us, he'll speak for us. It's a privilege and it's an honor. Our sages tell us that the key to effective communication is not attending the Dale Carnegie School for How to Make Friends and Influence People, but the key to effective communication is what? Devarim hayotzin min alev, words that emanate from the heart. Nichnasim alev, they penetrate into the heart of the listener. Every word that Rabbi Pfeiffer will utter in his wonderful lecture, as you will discover yourself, comes right out of his heart. Without any further ado, Rabbi Pfeiffer, please honor us and come forward.
I consider it a privilege and honor to be asked by Rabbi Zaitchik to come speak, and I always have tremendous respect for the literally mysterious nefesh that Rabbi Zaitchik has to spread the word of Hashem and teach Torah to people from Westchester, every corner of Westchester. And he does so with great, great effort and great love. And the feelings that I always get when I speak to him about lecturing and speaking, and he was working in JEP, I'm jealous of him. And that's why I always agreed to come, because I want to be able to say after 120 years that I had something to do with JEP of Westchester. That's my schus, that's my reward for coming here, that I could say I'm a part of JEP. I also want to thank Mrs. Goldfeder for opening up her home for the lecture. Every time, Baruch Hashem, I think this is the third time I'm in this home. And each time I come, I notice something which I didn't see before. And I just it's just amazing. Just amazing what a woman can do to a home. It's just amazing. And I'm glad to see Taka, the picture of her late husband, Yehuda, and the Marshim should help, that the words that I say, if they have any good effect on anybody, it should be a schus Taka for the neshama of Rabbi Yehuda. And again, I thank everyone that came to listen. It makes it much easier to speak and there's a full room. I must give credit for the name of the lecture to Rabbi Zaitchik, Cardiac Judaism. And I'll tell you the truth, when he told me that, I told him basically what I wanted to speak about, he chose the name of the topic. I said, I just don't want anyone to think that I'm going to tell everyone that it's enough if a person has a good Jewish heart. I grew up with that idea that people that would be asked, you know, why aren't you doing certain mitzvahs? Why aren't you keeping kosher? And they would answer, don't bother me with the trivial details of Judaism. I have a good Jewish heart. And that's not the hashkafa that I want to espouse tonight. It's not what I want to teach anyone. But at the same time, there is the genius of the Jewish heart. There is something very special about the heart of a Jew, and it's the club that we're part of is open to other people. Rus, we just landed on Shavuos. Rus joined the Jewish people, and immediately she was given that gift of the Jewish heart. The Jewish heart can be acquired. A member of the Jewish people has that heart. Chazal tell us there are three simonim, three signs of a Jew. Rachamonim, Baishonim, V'goyim Lechasodim. People of compassion, people who are modest, and people who are Goyim Lechasod, who do kindness with others. This is what we want to discuss tonight. The genius of the Jewish heart. We just learned this past Shabbos in Pirkei Avos. Shimon HaTzadik Hoya Mishiyorei Knesset HaGdoila. Shimon, that was called Shimon, the righteous one, was from the last of the group of people called the Anshei Knesset HaGdoila, the men of the great assembly, 120 of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim, scholars, righteous men, who were the transmitters of Torah in their generation. He was from the last ones. And he remarked, Al Shloisha Dvorim Ha'olam Oimed, the world stands on three pillars. Al HaTorah, on the study and observance of Torah. Al HaVoida, on the service of Hashem, which includes today prayer. And Al Gmilas Chasodim, on acts of kindnesses. When a person does an act of kindness to another human being, he is holding up the world. The world stands on the chasodim that we do for one another. And it's very possible that the success of the country that we are zeicha to live in, America, is called Medina Shel Chesed by the great tzaddikim and leaders of our nation. They've said it. It's a Malchus Shel Chesed. It's a government. It's a that's built on chesed, of kindness. America succeeds because America is a nation of kindness. They do kindness. And yet, the pinnacle, the example par excellence is the chesed of a yid. A friend of mine who lives in Chicago called me up a few years ago, and whenever he has a good story, he knows to give me a call because I like to collect stories. And this happened to him. He says he was flying from Chicago here to New York, and as he's waiting through the endless line to the TSA security check, a black security guard comes over to him and he says to him, Rabbi, you're flying to New York? He says, yes. United Flight 301 or American 260? He said, United 301. Okay, I'll speak to you later. What? I'll speak to you later. I don't have time right now. Who is this man? What does he want from me? He was a security guard at O'Hare. He goes, my friend goes through security, and he makes his way to the gate, sits down to wait for boarding, and a few minutes later, this fellow comes over to him. Rabbi says, can I have a few minutes to speak to you? He says, I guess so, sure, have a seat. He sits down next to him and says, listen, I have a problem and I need your help. What in the world? He says, listen, I'm engaged. My fiance is an Israeli girl, a Jewish girl. So my friend is saying, oh no. Oh, what a shidduch. And he says, and this is the problem. We were engaged She was here in Chicago studying in college. That's where we met, and we decided to get engaged, to be married. And my fiancé went back to Israel to take care of certain business. She was going to be there for a few months and come back to Chicago, and we would get married. She goes back to Eretz Yisrael, and she was just turning 18 then, young girl. And she applied to the, she's officially at 18, you join the army. So she wrote a letter, she filled out forms, which she had to fill out, to explain that she's moving to America and she's getting married there. And she can't be in the army right now. I don't know exactly how it works. You get a deferment. If you come back, you'll have to serve. I don't know exactly the laws, but she went to fill out this form. And she stood on endless lines of bureaucracy trying to get these forms filled out on time. And, you know, she filled it out. And each a few times she went, she was told she's missing this paper and that document and this information. Till finally she got everything put together and gave it into the office. Okay. And she's supposed to get back this paper that allows her to defer her army service. And she can leave the country and go to America to get married. She says, on the day of her 18th birthday, there was a knock on her door. And two military policemen are standing there. And they say, you're under arrest. Under arrest? She says, for what? For what? Avoiding the draft. Draft? I went to the office, I filled out a deferment. I'm getting married in America. We have no such form filled out. You must have filled it out correctly. You're under arrest. And my fiancé was taken by these two policemen, and she's sitting in a military jail for trying to evade the army. So my friend's listening. He says, okay, so where do I come in? Oh, so well, let me explain, he says. My fiancé called me, and she told me, listen, she said, whatever the fellow's name was, let's call him Jesse. Jesse, you have to get me out of jail. So I said to her, what in the world do you want from me? I'm just a black security guy, no hair airport. How can I fight with the Israeli government? I'm here in Chicago. How can I help you get out of jail? So she said to me, Jesse, listen, you work in the airport. In O'Hare Airport, there's got to be a lot of Jewish people that are traveling. Most of them, a lot of them fly to New York. Listen to what I have to tell you. When you see a man walk into the airport with a beard and a black hat, stop him and ask him to help you. So I said to her, how's that going to work? She says, listen, anyone that's Jewish will do anything to help out another Jew. Just stop him and ask him to get me out of jail. Could you imagine? A girl who's holding by getting married to a black security guard in Chicago here. She knows enough to say that if you see a fellow with a beard and a yarmulke on, rest assured that person will leave no stone unturned to help you out. Now, of course, this was an exceptional case. My friend was not going to do anything to help her get married to the security guard. I assure you, he didn't. He said, I don't know if there's anything he can do, you know. He excused himself. And I said, he said, powerless to help him. But just this idea that even this Jewish girl, so estranged from Judaism, understood that if there's a religious Jew, he's going to do whatever he can to help another person. We say in Davening, in Sim Sholem, every day, Ki vi'or ponecha, with the light of your face, kaviyochal, so to speak, by God, Nosat tolonu Hashem alikeinu, God, you gave us, Toiras chayim, you gave us a living Torah, vi'ahavas chesed, and the love of chesed. It's not enough just that we as Jews are commanded to do chesed by Hashem. But there has to be within us, and this is what we thank Hashem, for giving us this midah, this character trait of avas chesed, the love of kindness. Everyone remembers the story of Avraham Avinu sitting at the entranceway of his tent. Third day, he's 99 years old, and he just had his circumcision, just commanded by God to perform the first circumcision mentioned in the Torah, the one Avraham Avinu gave himself at 99 years old. And the third day after an operation, I think it's been medically proven, Chazal say it, it's the most difficult, most painful day. And he's sitting outside The pasuk says, "Kechoim hayoyim," in the heat of the day. And Rashi tells us that actually that day was unnaturally hot. God, it says the words used are, God took the sun out of its shell. He removed some layer, maybe the ozone layer, that protects us from the heat of the sun, and allowed the sun's rays to bake down on earth at a much higher temperature than usual. Why did God do that? Because he didn't want Avram to bother with guests 3 days after having gone through surgery. Says Rashi, God saw that Avram Avinu's pain at not being able to perform chesed, of not being able to invite in guests to his house, was greater than the pain that he had physically from his circumcision. And so Hashem brought three angels in the guise of human beings to come down and act as guests so that Avram can invite them into his tent. And the pasuk tells us, Vayar, Avram sees them, Vayorotz likrotzom. A 99-year-old man, 3 days after surgery, is running after the malachim. I heard once from my Rebbe, Rav Mordechai Gifter, Zechet Tzadik Levrocha, the late Rosh Hashiva in Cleveland tells. He said, why is Avram in pain? Why does he feel badly? We know if someone needs something, there's a mitzvah to do chesed. Someone is in need. We need to see someone needs a few dollars or a helping hand. He's in trouble. We want to help him out. We do a chesed. But if there's no one there that needs a chesed, there are no wayfarers, there are no passerby, no one's coming by, no one needs a place to eat, no one needs something to drink. Isn't that great? Wouldn't that be like utopia? There are no poor people anymore. No one needs my graciousness. No one needs my kindness. So, what's there to feel bad about? Why is Avram stricken with pain that there's no one to invite in? Said my Rebbe, Rav Gifter, Zechet Tzadik Levracha, that's called Avas Chesed. It's not enough. I'm not doing chesed just because you need something, so I want to fulfill that need. It's a love of chesed. The need of chesed by a Jew is that we love doing chesed. And if I can't find someone upon whom to shower my kindness, I feel incomplete. I'm not a complete human being if I can't do chesed with somebody else. Across the street from the yeshiva in Chicago, where I learned after I was in Cleveland Tells, I went to Chicago Tells. Across the street from the yeshiva, there was the home for the Jewish blind. It was a beautiful, some type of nursing home, which catered to Jewish blind. It had other non-Jewish residents as well, but it was officially called the Chicago Home for the Jewish Blind, or the Jewish Home for the Blind. Anyway, I have a very good friend who now lives in Cleveland, who was learning in Chicago with me then. And he said to me, Menachem, I want to tell you a good chesed that I started doing. I'll fill you in it. You can also join if you want. He says, I go across the street to the blind home during lunch break, and I visit the people there. And I read them the Jewish newspaper. They like the Yiddish newspaper. And then I talk to them. I said, oh, Ephraim, that's such a great idea. Thank you so much. I also went a few times. So one day he says to me, Menachem, I got such a story today from my visit at the blind home. Unbelievable. He said, I'm there talking to somebody, and he's a real lively fellow. Mamish, so live spirited. And he's, you know, I say, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom. He's all lively. He says to me, my name is Abe Kramer. What's your name? He says, my name is Ephraim Nissenbaum. He says, you know something? I want to tell you a little bit about myself. I'll tell you the truth. I'm the one who built this home. I said, really? Yeah. I was a machinist. In my younger years, I lived here in Chicago. I worked in a factory. And I was an expert machinist. I knew how to build machines, fix machines, run machines. And I forgot which business he was in, but I taught my boss how to make the machines become much more productive. And I was paid top dollar. And then one day, Rachmana Litzlan Loyaleinu, a terrible accident occurred in the factory where I worked. There was an explosion, and Rachmana Litzlan Loyaleinu, I lost my sight in the accident. I was given a tremendous severance package from the company after all my years working there, and they had tremendous hakaras hatov. They appreciate what I had done for them. They gave me a tremendous amount of money. I could live off there comfortably for the rest of my life. But I said to myself, well, after a few weeks, this is life, sitting at home and just buying things for myself with the money that I have. I said, what can I do? What can I do without sight? And so I said, you know, I may not be able to see, but no one knows this business better than I do. I bought a competing company, and I built it up without seeing. I hired the people. I told them what to do. I built it up into a more successful business than the one I had worked for before. And I became a multimillionaire. I was more successful after I lost my sight than before when I was able to see. And I said, I want to do something for other people who are suffering like I am that can't see. And that's why I founded this Jewish Home for the Blind. And he says, every summer I come back here to Chicago. I have a room that's mine here in the home. And this is where I live for the winter, for the summer. For the winter, I own a home in Florida. And he says to my friend, I want to tell you something interesting that happened when I was in Florida this past year. I went to shul on Shabbos, and this fellow was an Orthodox Jew. So I went to shul one Shabbos, and I'm sitting in the back, and the rabbi gets up to speak, and he, you wouldn't believe what he says over in his drasha. He says over Gemara, and I assume I'll judge favorably the rabbi. He didn't notice that a blind man had walked into the synagogue. He had no idea. He didn't look like he was didn't look blind. You don't look blind. He looked like a regular fellow, and he was davening. The rabbi spoke about that which there's a Gemara, there's a Talmud that says there are four people that are considered like they're not really alive. And one of them is someone who's blind. He mentions this in his structure. Could you imagine with me sitting there, he said such a thing? He says, don't think I let him get away with it. At the end of davening, when I asked my friend who brought me to davening, tell me when the rabbi's passing by, I want to give him a piece of my mind. And he said to the rabbi, how do you say such a thing? I'm blind. Am I dead? What does Chazal mean? What does the Gemara mean when it says such a thing? And there's a beautiful explanation to the Gemara from Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz, Zechet Zagei Bracha, who was Rosh Yeshiva and Mir Yeshiva in Poland, and then in Shanghai during the war, and finally in Eretz Yisrael, the Mir Yeshiva, which today is the biggest yeshiva in the world. Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz explained, someone who's blind can't see when other people are suffering, can't share the pain of other people, and therefore doesn't have the ability to do chesed with another person. Another one mentioned is someone who's very poor, doesn't have the wherewithal to help out somebody else. The shared common denominator is people who are unable to give. If you can't give, then you're not really alive. Giving is living. Giving to others, that's what living is all about. Doing for somebody else. But according to that understanding, if a person is blind, yet manages to give to others, then that person is alive just as much as someone who can see. A person who's poor, has no money, but spends his whole day trying to do physically, help other people out, that person's alive as anyone else. As the more a person is giving, the more he's really living. That's the yesod of life. Life is, what can I do for somebody else? What can I do to do a chesed with another yid? Which, by the way, think about that as I'm saying that. There's no one that does bigger chesed than Rabbi Zaychik. He's doing the biggest chesed possible. Sharing the word of Hashem, sharing Torah with other people. There's no bigger chesed than that. Chesed is doing for other people. Someone who is living in England years ago, in the 1920s, was a tremendous askon, very busy, involved in every chesed organization that there was in London. He would run from one meeting to the next, and it took away some time that he would normally spend at home. And he began to think, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. Maybe I should limit the amount of time that I'm doing chesed with others. And he fought with himself which way is the right way to go, and finally decided he wants to go to the greatest sage of that generation to ask him the question. Now, those days, the almost universally accepted leader of Klal Yisrael was the Chafetz Chaim. Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen wrote the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, wrote the Sefer Mishneh Berurah, and about over 20 other Sfarim. And right at that time, there was going to be what was called the Knesset Gedolah, where there was a meeting of all the great giants of European Jewry were going to meet in Vienna at a meeting and discuss the problems facing Klal Yisrael. So he decided, what better opportunity. I'll travel to the Knesset Gedolah and I'll go to the Chafetz Chaim and I'll ask him my question. Should I curtail my involvement for others and spend more time at home, perhaps studying, perhaps doing things with my family, or no? Should I continue to be involved as much as I can, helping the community? He made a big mistake. There was no way he was going to get in to the Chafetz Chaim as the recognized leader of Klal Yisrael. He was besieged by the greatest leaders who wanted to talk to him. He couldn't get close to the Chafetz Chaim to ask him his question. He had the schus to see him, to hear, to be within his presence, around his presence, but to actually get over to him to ask him a question was impossible. But they spent one Shabbos there. The convention lasted over a weekend. And Shabbos, the Chafetz Chaim spoke by the third Suda, by Shalosh Sudas. Again, he couldn't ask the Chafetz Chaim his question, but at least he wanted to hear something from the Chafetz Chaim. So he pushed his way all the way near the front of the table where the Chafetz Chaim was sitting. And the Chafetz Chaim says, I'd like to say over something from the song that we just sang, the psalm that we just read from Tehillim. Mizma LeDavid, Hashem Roi LeYechzer, every shul that has Shalosh Sudas. That's the song that we sing, many places sing it thrice, three times at Shalosh Sudas. He said, I'd like to say a thought on that very Kapitel Tehillim. And he quoted the Pasuk. David HaMelech said, Ach Toiv V'Chesed Yirdefuni kol yemei chayai. Only toiv v'chesed, goodness and kindness, yirdefuni, should chase after me kol yemei chayai, all the days of my life. Chafetz Chaim asked, what did David HaMelech mean when he said those words? Roidef, a roidef in Hebrew is used when someone is chasing you, he wants to take your life. He's called a roidef. In Gemara it says, if there's a roidef that's chasing after another human being, anyone could shoot the roidef to stop him from murdering another Jew. The man that's being chased has a right to turn around and is allowed to kill the roidef. That's the word roidef. What does David HaMelech says? Saying, toiv, goodness and kindness should be roidef me. It's a strange way, a strange usage of the word. It's not roidef, it's not trying to hurt you. Roidev usually means something that's hurting you. Chafetz Chaim says, I think, pshat in that pasuk, in that verse. He said, every person in his lifetime is going to go through difficulties. No one has a perfect life. Everyone is besieged with problems. So David HaMelech said, Ribbono Shel Olam, if I have to be a nirdef, if I have to be chased by something, if I have to have problems, please, Ach toy v'chesed yedefuni. Let me be besieged by toy, by goodness and by kindness. Let me be chased after by people who want my help. That should be my redifus. That's what I should be chased by. And he was standing here and he hears the drusha. And he says, it wasn't necessary to speak to the Chafetz Chaim. He gave me the answer to my question. It's a schus to be zoicha, to be chased after. By chesed. Ach, toiv v'chesed, yedefuni. And it's a tremendous lesson. You know, sometimes we try to avoid. The shul is looking for someone who's going to volunteer to do this and that. And we know the reward of all those that try to do good for the tzibur. Complaints. Belly aching from people. I'm a rav of a shul. All the good people in my shul that do good, they all have one thing in common. They all have people who bother them and say, why did you do it this way? It could have been done much better. Why did you choose that color of paint? Why did you put down this type of floor? Why didn't you do this? Why did you do that? A bunch of Monday morning quarterbacks, they all have their opinions. And anyone that did something good for the shul, that's the way it goes. That's the reward of some in this world. In the next world, the reward will be light that we don't even understand. We never experienced here. But we have to have some problems. Let it be problems of doing chesed. Let those things be the things that are chasing after us. Not doctors and not hospitals, not chas v'shalom, other health issues or family issues. The things that we should suffer from is too many people asking us to do them a favor. It's the worst issue we should suffer from. But there's another aspect of chesed that I want to talk about. And this is really where I started from when Rabbi Zajac asked me to speak. An episode was related to me about a year ago, and I said, I have to share this. This is just so special. And when Rabbi Zajac asked me to speak, I said, oh, an opportunity to tell over this story. So he said, what subject do you want to talk about? I can't just say, I want to talk about a story. I had to make up a subject to surround it. But this is the reason why I came to speak tonight. There's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, Ashrei maskil eldol. Fortunate is the one who is maskil, who uses his seichel, who uses his genius, who uses his wisdom, eldol, to help out the impoverished one, to help out the poor one. There's a certain genius that a Jewish heart has. How could I help somebody else out in a way where he's not going to be embarrassed? Where I'm not going to make him feel uncomfortable. Where he's going to feel he did me the favor by taking my kindness. This is a special level of chesed. It's a higher level of chesed. A chesed that doesn't bring a person thanks. It's hidden chesed. It's the highest level of chesed. Ashrei maskil eldol. I had the opportunity to speak at a Sheva Brachas of someone I'm very close to. I happen to be related to him as well. And I heard this story about him. And ever since then, I have unbelievable, tremendous respect for him. He was learning in Lakewood Yeshiva. I'm sure you all heard of Lakewood Beis Medrash. It's the biggest yeshiva in America. I think it's the second biggest yeshiva in the world. He was learning there in the early 1960s, when it was a very small institution of about 120 students, and only about 25, 30 were married students. Today, many fortunate father-in-laws have the schus to support their sons-in-law learning in Kollel, learning after their marriage. Those days, it was not something that was accepted. It wasn't something that was very widespread. My father-in-law, I forgot, I shouldn't have told, I didn't want to say the name, but okay, I let it out already. My father-in-law was one of the first Yungalite that learned in Kollel in Lakewood. He didn't have a rich father or a rich father-in-law. He and his wife struggled to be able to stay in yeshiva for a few years after they got married. But they managed. But my father-in-law had a very close friend who was not managing at all. Not managing at all. Terribly, terribly poor. Literally could not put food on his table. Literally was suffering. But he was a very big tzaddik. Both he and his wife shared that attribute. And they wouldn't take charity. They said, no, it's our pleasure to do this for Torah, to be able to learn Torah. So we don't have meat or chicken during the week. Shabbos, we have some chicken or meat in our house. During the week, we manage. Peanut butter sandwich, tuna fish, it's not the end of the world. As long as it's nutritious and it's okay, it's fine, it fills us up. We're doing fine. And my father-in-law was bothered. He felt so badly. He's close friends with him. He tried different ways. Please, it's my pleasure to help you out. Can I send you my leftovers? What are the leftovers for? He wouldn't hear. One day, my father-in-law calls up this fellow. My father-in-law had traveled to New York for something. And he calls up his friend. Let's call him Reb Chaim. He says, Reb Chaim, right now I find myself in a wholesale grocer's warehouse. He says, okay, why are you telling this to me? He says, well, the thing is like this. This fellow has tremendous inventory of kosher canned groceries. And after a number of years of stockpiling, all his dented cans of vegetables and fruits and tuna fish and gefilte fish, all these different canned goods, he can't sell the dented cans in the stores. So he has them piled up, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of all different types of canned goods. They're sitting there in the factory. He doesn't know what to do with it. So he knows me, I'm a friend of his. He offered me, he'll sell me his whole, if I take all of it, he'll give it to me at 10 cents on the dollar. A can costs 50 cents, He'll give it to me for 5 cents. A can costs 99 cents. He'll give it to me for a dime. Just if I get it off his hands. If I bring a truck, he'll give me whatever he has and just give it to me 10 cents on the dollar. So I can't use all of it. I wanted to know, could I share some with you? So the fellow said, 10 cents on the dollar? Because the cans are dented? Who cares? Whatever you can get, I'll borrow money to pay for it. Can die. I'll stock up. I'll put it someplace in my basement. I'll have it for its canned goods. Could last for years. Get me whatever you can. And my father-in-law went, and he bought boxes of canned goods, brought it to his house, took out a hammer, and dented all the cans, and brought it to his next door neighbor, and sold it to him at 10 cents on the dollar. That's called Ashrei Maskil Eldol. To use one's genius. How could I help out another person without hurting them? I said over this story when my niece got married, and I wanted to say over her, I want you to know who my niece is, who her grandfather is. I finished my drasha, and the uncle of the chosen who was married, this niece of mine, comes over to me and says, you know, that story really touched me. And it made me understand that this match was made in heaven. This is a real shidduch. I said, why? I want to tell you a story about the mother of the chosn. And he tells me like this. This is my sister. She wouldn't want me to tell you, but I'm telling you, you should know the shidduch was made in heaven. He says, my sister lives on a block in Brooklyn. Not one of the more exclusive neighborhoods in Brooklyn. In fact, I'll be honest with you, sometimes they call Bayswater is this neighborhood of the Queens. They call us that neighborhood because we share in the fact that we're not the most wealthy community. So she lives on a block, and she has a neighbor who, Baruch Hashem, has a large family, has been married for many years, and also borderline poor, very, very, very hard at the time, making ends meet. And she's been in their house, they live in each other's homes. She goes in there and she always, it bothers her so much. All the towels in the house are threadbare. They have a lot of kedusha. They're very holy. And the pots and pans, half of them are missing handles. The toaster oven is held with band-aids closed. The door. Everything about the house is worn down and overused. And she also, he told me, she's tried to get them. She'll call them and say, you know, I just got a new toaster oven. Can I give you my old toaster oven maybe? She says, old toaster oven? I have an old toaster oven, Baruch Hashem. I need another old toaster oven. Even though hers was 20 times better than her, she wouldn't take it. She couldn't find a way to help. She says, finally, my sister had a brainstorm. She called up a printer in Borough Park and she asked him to print up raffle tickets for Hachnosas Kala, $2 a ticket. And the grand prize was a dream home makeover. That was the grand prize. She got the order of tickets. She only had one book printed. She sent her daughter down the block to her neighbor. And of course, neighbor's daughter comes to sell a ticket for $2. She's going to say, of course she bought it. And 2 weeks later, she had another friend call up that lady and say, I'm calling from this Hachnosas Kala organization. I'm glad to tell you, you won the grand prize of the Dream Homemaker. We have a truckload of home items that are waiting to be delivered to you. When can we bring it? It says, whenever you feel convenient. And the next day, a truck pulled up with linens and towels and pots and pans and appliances, all for this lady who had no idea that she was the recipient of a chesed. This is what he tells me about his sister. I was astounded. I thought I had one story. And he shared another one. In preparation for this drasha, I read a story which I couldn't believe it. Mamish came out the same type of story. This was written by, set over by a close friend of mine who lives in Silver Spring. His name is Rebbe Fol Mendelovitz Shlita. He's a Rebbe in high school in Silver Spring. And he set over, he was in a toy store in Baltimore. And he hears a little girl, it's a couple weeks before Hanukkah, and he sees a lot of Jewish families are there shopping for toys for Hanukkah. And this little girl's with her father, and she stops by a very fancy-looking doll, and she says to her father, Daddy, will I be able to buy this? He says, sure, no problem. Puts it into the cart. How much money do I have left? You still have plenty of money left. He goes weiter, and she goes to another down and says, can I add this one? He says, yes, you still have plenty of money left. You can add that one too. And in the same time, there's another aisle, he overhears a little boy with his father. And the little boy says, oh, this car, what's it called again? The one that you don't have to, it's no wires attached. Remote control car. This is exactly what I dreamed about to have for Hanukkah. Daddy, can I get this car? He says, Yanki, you know, it's too expensive. I'm sorry. Come, we'll go down to another aisle. I'll get you some stickers for Hanukkah. And my friend was listening. He felt so bad for the little boy. He was so disappointed. And the boy goes down to another aisle. And he hears the little girl. The little girl overheard it as well. The little girl says to her father, Daddy, I decided I don't want the second doll. Okay. She walks down the aisle where the car was. And she picks up the remote control car. He says, okay, Daddy, let's go. Let's go pay. He says, what are you doing with the car? I want that little boy to have it. She goes over to the cashier, and my friend he couldn't hear what she was saying to the cash register, delayed at the cash register, but they paid for the car, and they paid for the doll, and the lady at the cash register put the car under her counter. And they left the store, and he watches, the little boy comes with his father, and they're buying the stickers, whatever little things. They finish paying, and as they finish paying, the cash register lady says, congratulations! You are the 1,000th customer of the week! You win a grand prize of free remote control car! And the little boy starts screaming out, I can't believe it! My best Hanukkah gift ever! I won a prize! He was all excited. And my friend said he was like, he couldn't believe his eyes. This little girl thought such a thing. He walks out of the store and he's going to his car, and right there, the little girl's getting into the car with her father, and he hears the father saying to her, you know, I don't know if it was right what we did, because Zadie and Bubby sent you the check and they said specifically they want you to buy the best toys, whatever makes you happy. She says, Daddy, that's what I did. I bought what made me happy. It made me happy to give that boy that car. I thought to myself, you know, two adults that I heard a story about was one thing, but to read that a little girl could have the heart to do a chesed to a little boy on her own, to come up with an ingenious idea. This only could be explained. The three simonim of a Jew. Rachmonim, Baishonim, V'koim Lechasonim. There's just something about it. The Jewish heart has feeling for another yid, is able to do chesed beyond description. I'll end with one last thought. When we do chesed in this world, when we perform acts of chesed, our actions create a spirit of chesed in the world. The Nefesh HaChaim says that the difference between a human being and every other bria in the world is that our actions are mashpia. They create vibrations, spiritual vibrations that affect the world here and the upper worlds as well. There was a famous Rosh Yeshiva in Philadelphia Yeshiva named Rav Mendel Kaplan, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who was known to have a tremendous love for every single person in the world. Not only every Jew, but every person, every human being. It's famous that he would pick up hitchhikers when he would travel. At one point he was a Rebbe in Chicago, and his family lived in New York. He would travel home every Thursday afternoon, drive through the night to New York to spend Shabbos home, and then go back on Sunday. Later he was a Rebbe in Philadelphia, in Chicago, then he moved to Philadelphia, and again he would drive home every Shabbos, from Philadelphia, every Shabbos. And he would pick up people, hitchhikers. And in the 60s and 70s, it wasn't as dangerous. I'm just throwing, by the way, on the side, that I just read recently a story about him. He picked up a hitchhiker, and as was his custom, he's talking to him the whole way, and when he stopped to get gas, he bought a drink for himself, and for the hitchhiker that he picked up. And finally, he gets to New York, and he tells the guy, "Okay, I'm here's where I get off." The guy says to him, "Sir, I have to tell you something. I really had no need to go any place. What I do is I hitchhike from place to place. When I leave the car, I have this, and I rob the person who gave me the ride. but after spending these hours with you, I couldn't do it to you. Thank you for the ride. And he walked out. So this is Rav Mendel Kaplan, Zechon Zecher Tzadik Avracha, when he was a Rebbe in Philadelphia, there was a fellow, a homeless fellow, used to hang around the yeshiva sometimes, used to come in for breakfast once in a while, and for lunch, and for supper, and for some donations, a Jewish guy, Nebuch, who was not all there, and he was homeless. And being homeless, he didn't have the greatest smell about him. And the boys would run to him, give him quickly a coin or a dollar, and try to get as far away from him as they could. And one time he crossed paths with Rav Mendel Kaplan in front of the boys. And Rav Mendel Kaplan sees the fellow, and he says to him, "Oh, I haven't seen you for so long." He walks over to him, and he gives the guy a hug. And the boys were shocked. How could you touch that guy? He's filthy. All filthy. His clothes are filthy. He smells horrible. And for the Rebbe to give him a hug and say, "Oh, it's so good to see you." They just watched, and their mouth dropped open. When the fellow walked away, they said, "Rebbe, how can you touch him? He smells terrible, horrible." He said, "My dear Talmidim," he said, "sometimes we also smell very bad. Some of the things that we do, we don't smell so good. And it doesn't stop God from hugging us. If we want God to hug us, we have to hug another Jew. Ach toiv v'chesed yedifuni kol yemei chayei." We should all be zeicha. The only problem that we should have in life is that we're busy doing chesed to others. We should all be zeicha to be givers. Keep on giving. Keep on living. Thank you very much for listening and allowing me to come.
I have three things to say. Number one, anybody have any questions at this special moment? You don't usually get to pose a question to such a beautiful heart.
Something bothered me, if I could ask. In one of the first stories of the man who was blinded, his employer was very kind. They were kind to him, and they treated him well, and then he went into competition with them. I found that a little distressing.
Okay. And that's the way I remember the story being told. I hear. Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions? At this time, any other questions? Okay. Point number two. We have just had an opportunity to experience to be in the presence of such a beautiful Jewish heart. Try to imagine Rabbi Pfeiffer surrounded by people. Try to imagine Rabbi Pfeiffer surrounded by people who are struggling with terrible problems, who are at the end of their rope, and they don't know how they're going to make it. Try to imagine how he would react. I do want you to know that when Sandy hit, Rabbi Pfeiffer's entire community was devastated. It was one of the top, one of the places on the top of the list. His shul, I used to walk by his shul before Sandy. His shul is about 6 feet below the surface of the sidewalk. And I know sometimes they had flooding in out in the Far Rockaway area, and I would think this shul looks like a submarine. And when Sandy struck, it filled the shul with water. 6, 7, 8 feet of water, destroying thousands of Sfarim, devastating the shul. And it was Rabbi Pfeiffer, I can tell you, I can bear witness to the fact that not only did he rise to the occasion for his shul, for the people of his congregants, but for the entire area, Rabbi Pfeiffer's leadership, his heart went out to literally hundreds and hundreds of people who were in the worst desperation. So, for me, Rabbi Pfeiffer, you are a tremendous inspiration and for all of us. The point number three that I would like to make is the fact that 1 week from this Shabbos, you have a wonderful opportunity. Jeff of Westchester will be involved in a spectacular Shabbaton. If you want to spend one Shabbos together with us in a magnificent community, New Hempstead, in Rockland County, 15-20 minutes, the other side of the Tappan Zee. We invite you to join us for an unforgettable experience. We have a whole group of people who are coming. If you'd like to know more about it, if you want to jump on the bandwagon, speak to me before we have to close out reservations. It's a really special opportunity. I want to wish you all a wonderful evening. Shelley invites everybody to participate in... Excellent. Shelley invites everybody to the dining room to partake in the refreshments that she has prepared. You will find, if you notice pie right over here, these orange flyers. We have one more JEP lecture for this season before the summer break. So we have classes through the summer, but if you want to catch the last lecture, Tuesday night, June 11th, grab a flyer. It's all yours, and hope to see you then. And I would like to also mention that this particular upcoming lecture is going to be in memory of a friend's maiden mother, friend's maiden mom, so it should be a listening show for her as well. Have a safe trip home. Great to have you.